This is side two, tape number 372, January 19th, 1979. I'll give you a little background and details on the death of Paisley, as far as we know so far, and then go into the importance of him in the other story, given the background that I gave you on side one. He went out to sea. He was sailing Saturday, September 23rd. He contacted Colonel Norman Wilson, Air Force officer, Defense Intelligence Agency, a friend of his for about 10 years, and he sent a message to call him between 5 and 6. And it turned out that he had very complicated intelligence equipment on the boat that only the National Security Agency could have had on there. Between 5 and 6, he called Paisley, and Paisley said to him, "Keep the lights on when the ship lands. I'll be out after dark." That was between 5 and 6, and he wasn't heard from again. Sunday the 24th, the Coast Guard reported that they found this craft going out near the Potomac River where it goes into the bay. Point Lookout, they landed, the Coast Guard got there. Nobody was aboard. There was no tracks in the sand to or from the boat. The boat was sitting there. There were shoes there and documents, and the radio was turned on. And they called Mrs. Paisley at her home in McLean, Virginia. They separated in August, 1 month before all of this took place, but they were supposed to be going back together again. And I have some ideas about this severance, if he's taken a new identity and gone somewhere. But they were at separate apartments. He had an apartment and she had a place, and they called her Mary Ann Paisley, and she went with Colonel Wilson and Philip Wagner, Paisley's replacement at the CIA when he retired in 74. And of course, we find out he's still working, so I don't know what it means by retired. So it's Philip Wagner of the CIA. And then two CIA security officers, Joseph Mirabel and Frank Rocco, that went. And then they phoned the headquarters, and they didn't find any trace of blood or a struggle, simply that he was missing, and that documents were removed from the boat. They took them, the CIA took them from the boat. Then they went to Mrs. Paisley's apartment, and they picked up additional documents, or his apartment on Massachusetts Avenue, rather, and they found some live cartridges on the boat and in the apartment. The disappearance wasn't reported for 1 week, and the body was discovered, as I say, October the 1st. The Maryland State Police waited, received the body, they examined it, issued a death certificate for John Arthur Paisley, signed by Dr. Russell Fisher, Chief of Medical Examiners. It was sent to a mortuary that does work for the Central Intelligence Agency. They were ordered to send it to a specific, this mortuary does work for the CIA agents. The body was supposed to be decomposed beyond recognition, except for the skin on one hand. One hand had eroded. The hair and the beard were gone after 1 week, and they took off the hands. And then the CIA and FBI said they had absolutely no record of any fingerprints for Paisley, even though he'd worked for them since 1948, and the CIA sends all fingerprints to the FBI. That's one reason why I think he wasn't murdered, because if somebody, the Russians or somebody, took him and grabbed him and killed him, took him off that boat and put him on another boat and killed him, because he was shot and there was no blood around, I don't think that the fingerprints would have been removed from the FBI office. They would have had his prints. So this obviously had to be an inside job, because the evidence was destroyed, and if they were giving him a new identity, they've gotten rid of the old fingerprints. As the FBI said, it was inadvertently destroyed, sort of like John Kennedy's brains missing from the archives, or Lee Harvey Oswald's 201 files from the CIA missing. The state police, Maryland State Police, didn't fingerprint his boat. They didn't fingerprint his apartment in Washington, D.C., or the Washington, D.C. offices to see if anyone had been around him or with him. They didn't come up for any prints until 3 weeks later, and they said that as a 17-year-old, John Paisley had written to the FBI and volunteered a set of fingerprints. So they tried to say that fingerprints later matched, that he was 17 and offered them, "Do you want my fingerprints?" Which is an interesting story, and the dentist has refused to discuss any dental findings. And the death certificate was sent 18 days after it was issued to the widow, also the CIA woman. hands severed from the body. And they made note in the New York Times, Ted Zalk said that it was an unusual procedure to sever hands, severing hands before cremation. But I think of Donald DeFries and his head and hands severed by the Los Angeles Police Department, which has never yet been explained. And of course, the body, as I say, was weighted with 38 pounds. There was no reason for a suicide. There was a woman with him, always a woman, Cherche La Femme, and always looked for a psychiatrist. There was a woman that he was seeing a lot. They don't mention her by name, of course. And this psychiatrist friend, interesting. I think of Candy Jones and the story that she was told how to commit suicide and after she finished her CIA work. And remember, this is the week of the hearings of the Yuri Nushenko, Lee Harvey Oswald story before the House Select Committee. John Hart was testifying about Yuri Nushenko before the House Committee. Hart worked with both Nushenko and John Paisley, and Nushenko worked with Lee Harvey Oswald in the Soviet Union and was familiar with his KGB work. So they either had to kill this Paisley or give him a new identity, because we know the Hart testimony was planned long in advance, and G. Robert Blakey worked with the CIA and the FBI, so they had plenty of time to arrange separate papers or passports or identity. And that's why I think, even with cremation, I don't know why they don't cremate hands, but they cut off the hands for some reason, and this woman psychiatrist was with him. If they gave him a double identity or personality, is it possible then that she accompanied him that last month that he was separated to his wife? Because in these stories over and over again, these women psychiatrists that are accompanying these men, and she was the last female companion that was around him, the woman psychiatrist, before he disappears. There's no motive for suicide, good health, no financial problems, making $50,000 a year, getting along with his children. If he was committing suicide, why would he put on a diver's belt? Why not just die? Why sink himself? And no evidence of how the trigger was shot. And if he was murdered, there's no sign of blood or anything on the boat. They'd have to put him on another boat and then murder him, pull up alongside and then murder him and leave some shell in his boat or the CIA papers. It couldn't be for any of those highly deep, highly classified CIA documents, because they were still on the boat and the radio was still on, and yet he was gone in a body that couldn't be identified and was cremated under the most mysterious circumstances appeared a week later. So the question of whether or not he has a double or is hypnotized like Candy Jones, who was Arlene Grant, and has gone off to another place and they've destroyed prints so that nobody can connect them to the earlier prints, is a possibility. Well, who is this great John Paisley? Because, as I say, we got very little. For a week they didn't announce he was dead. Then they said, oh, a man was off on a boat and weighted himself down and shot himself in the head and did some work for the Soviet Department of the CIA. Well, John Paisley is a different kind of a person. First, Ted Zalk says he worked from 1953 to 74 for the Central Intelligence Agency. Then he contradicts himself and goes back to 1948, deep cover counterintelligence, up to the present day when he died he was working. So forget what he said and fill in the other years. He was deputy chief of the Office of Strategic Research, which is part of the DDI, Directorate of Intelligence. That is directly under the chief of the strategic research of the Director of Intelligence of the CIA. He was the deputy chief, next in line. And again, the article that you read in the New York Times says that he was an analyst for the white side of the CIA that makes the arrangements. There's a definition here of the black side is a clandestine, the group that act out their secret activities, and the others do the planning. But then that's contradicted in the article as he goes on to say that it's very strange that spokesman said that Paisley never liked the clandestine side. That's what they said at the CIA. Yet everything about him, his work with Marianne Paisley and John Hart and Catherine Hart and Yuri Nushenko, so showed that they'd been on the clandestine side, deep into the highest levels of the clandestine spying. And that's why I gave on the other side the background of Leon Marina and Alexander Zeiger and the Soviet connections with John McVicker and Richard Snyder and Priscilla Johnson, because we had all these CIA agents working with them over there in the Soviet Union, and these were the Soviet experts. Now, Paisley's covert activities, according to the New York Times article, began long before he signed up for the CIA. He was supposed to have signed up in 1953. His early background was that he was born in Phoenix, Arizona. He went to the University of Chicago, where he got an electrical engineering degree. He was a merchant marine radio operator in World War II. In 1948, when the war was over, he went to Palestine. He was age 25 years old, as an operator for the United Nations. Israel was to become a country in 1948. He went there in 1949, and he joined what was called a peacemaking mission, headed at that time by Count Bernadotte, the Swedish gentleman who was over in Palestine, who was assassinated in Palestine at this time. And the article, the background this week says that I read that they're not sure how he linked up with the Bernadotte mission, but I'm pretty sure through the Galen connections. The OSS became the CIA in 1947, but the Galen operation had agents over in the Middle East through the entire war. The Nazis were very heavy in the Middle East. Remember the years, the chronology is so important. In 1943, the Nazis went underground and began to disperse their agents, realizing they couldn't win against the Soviet Union. In 1945, the war was over. In 1945, the United Nations began to be formed. In 1948, Israel became a country. And in 1948, James Angleton was recruiting in the Middle East. His superior, Alan Dulles, was working in Switzerland and dispersing Nazis over the entire world and into the United States. If you read Galen's Spy of the Century and Project Paperclip, you pick up the details. There are many books on the subjects, but those are two good ones. So James Angleton worked his way up to be chief of all counterintelligence in the Central Intelligence Agency, and he's the gentleman who said at the time of one of the hearings, was it the Rockefeller hearings, that the room of John Kennedy had many houses. There was a quotation there suggesting there are many rooms to this story, and I think James Angleton was right, and I think Paisley had one of those rooms. They worked together from 1948, then they're missing years from 48 to 53. These are the unaccounted years where Paisley was obviously getting Russian language training and work for setting up the network of espionage in the Soviet Union. In 1950, he services as a full-time agent of the CIA in the analytical work on Soviet strategic problems. Now, that's desk work, which is a cover called analytical work, but it doesn't explain the 5 years of clandestine work training that preceded the analytical work. And when he goes into his work on the strategic Soviet problems in 1953, he stays there for a good long time through the entire Cold War period and up through the Oswald Nosenko period at what they call desk work. Now, Paisley was always in touch with James Angleton, even though he had a desk work for analytical research. He was always in touch with counterintelligence and was with him from 1948 on. Paisley became what they call the Soviet expert in the Central Intelligence Agency. Now, that is pretty high up when you consider the role that Lee and Marina were to take in affecting American history later. The key of the CIA specialist on the Soviet strategic research and deployment was John Paisley. He had mastered the Russian language. He read Soviet technical journals. He had a flow of Soviet intelligence intercepted by the United States that he was responsible for reading it. Now, this is very important because Lee Harvey Oswald was sending home books and magazines and journals to the United States. They were mailed from the Soviet Union here. The National Security Agency was intercepting all mail from the Soviet Union, and yet at the time of the House Select hearings, they said that they had no information about Lee Harvey Oswald. Well, John Paisley was reading the mail that was intercepted by the United States, the flow of Soviet intelligence. So he had to be getting mail from Lee Harvey Oswald back and forth, or Marina to her family. And Lee Harvey Oswald's radar information, when he went over to the Soviet Union, he defected and said he would be a traitor to the United States. So it's hard to believe when Lee was writing to Mama and Robert and friends over here in Marina, and he were sending magazines, that John Paisley didn't get them. If he was reading mail intercepted from the Soviet Union in the United States, he knew pretty darn well who Lee Harvey Oswald was. And certainly through the U-2 trials and the documents in the National Archives existed, if they're not whitewashed, about Lee Harvey Oswald and the U-2 flights. But Oswald said he was watching vapor trails and was into intelligence in the Soviet Union. This is Virginia Bates, the secretary he went to when he came home, dictated papers to, always believed he was working with the Soviet intelligence. And as I say, there's agents like Priscilla Johnson and John McVicker, Richard Snyder, Alexander Zeiger, and I go on and repeat these to you. Maybe they'll be your household words like they are mine. You'll remember some of these names. But John Paisley became the Soviet expert in the CIA, and he was privy. This was the New York Times as to one of the most jealously kept CIA secrets, which was the sources and the methods of acquiring intelligence on Soviet nuclear development. Now, I think if John Paisley and James Angleton worked closely in the Soviet intelligence area, they were also sharing their sources and methods of acquiring intelligence and could use Lee and Marina Oswald for the Cold War when they were brought back at CIA expenses. And again, as I say, given a passport to make still another trip, Lee Harvey Oswald. Now, he later was the expert until his death on Soviet nuclear capability, and he worked in the most important work since 1974, which has nothing to do with Yuri Nosenko or Lee or Marina Oswald, but since 1974, he's worked on the most highly classified intelligence documents that the CIA ever had, and he was working on them at the time of his death. So he was no small potato in the intelligence field, but at the time Lee Harvey Oswald was in the Soviet Union, he still was the deputy chief there in charge of Soviet affairs and very high up. During the 1960s, this was in 1964, right after the John Kennedy assassination, Yuri Nosenko came to the United States, and he was debriefed by Paisley. He, as I say, was a KGB agent, and he was considered the most senior KGB agent that ever defected to the USA. The KGB has some pretty good agents, but he's supposed to be the highest that defected, similar to the reverse process, Kim Philby, who was British intelligence, who went to the other side and was working for Soviet Union. And John Arthur Paisley and Nosenko became very close friends up to the day that he died. I mean, the spring before Paisley was killed, just before the House Select hearings, he was down in North Carolina at Nosenko's home. He's been friendly with Nosenko from the time he came over here, April of 64, to the present time, till September 78. He was a friend of Yuri Nosenko's. And if he had any doubts about KGB or Nosenko being a double agent, I doubt if a man as high up in the United States Intelligence Agency could be spending 8 or 10 days at a time in North Carolina taking his boat down there with that fancy equipment to see Yuri Nosenko. Marianne Paisley, the wife of John Paisley, was working for the CIA. As I said, she has been described as one, this is a quote, one of the most sensitive divisions of the CIA placed her in their office, and she was a handling officer for foreign clandestine operations. Now, Ted Zalk protects the agency he worked or works for, the CIA, by giving a date. In 1974, she handled funds for the foreign clandestine operations. There's absolutely no reason to doubt that Marianne Paisley wasn't handling funds for clandestine operations at the same time that her husband was the director of intelligence for strategic research for the Soviet Union. I can't see how she would jump in on it in 1974 when she's ready to retire and be handling this. He doesn't say how long she had this office. Her immediate superior, the wife of John Paisley, Marianne Paisley, her immediate superior in the Central Intelligence Agency was Catherine Hart, the wife of the man, the CIA agent, who came before the House Select Committee and who dealt extensively with Yuri Nosenko. So you have John Paisley in charge of Soviet intelligence, the Deputy Chief Office of Strategic Research, who worked with the clandestine side of intelligence and James Angleton since 1948, and working with the entire Soviet intelligence and mail coming in and satellites and U-2 flights and so forth. At the time Lee Harvey Oswald was in the Soviet Union, this man's wife is working in the clandestine funding agents, and she works under Catherine Hart, the man who will be meeting Yuri Nosenko. So the Harts both worked in this country, presumably. I don't know how much they traveled, John Hart and Catherine Hart. But when Yuri Noshenko arrived, he was interrogated by both John Arthur Paisley and John Hart, and they were responsible. And as I mentioned before, Marianne Paisley's attorney now is Bernard Fencerwald, McCord's attorney from the Committee to Investigate Assassinations. This KGB defector came to the United States. He was brought in at a time, as I say, when the Warren Commission was working. He was the second chief of directorate of the CIA, and he was responsible for counterintelligence within the Soviet Union. Now, that means setting up agents, double agents. He's the man that could bring Zeiger to Minsk. He could put Lee in the Minsk radio factory. He could put Marina with Zeiger's daughters and make the connections. Noshenko had that capability, and he was brought over as soon as John Kennedy was killed, and I think he was brought to get him out of Russia. And I think the reason they put him in a vault and built a house around it was that so no Russian agents could get him and get even with him for betraying the KGB and for being a Galen agent. Yeah, John Paisley was working on the most top-secret CIA intelligence work in a decade when they brought Noshenko over here. He was brought into the case at a time when the Kennedy assassination was being investigated, when people were trying to make the Soviet Union responsible for killing Kennedy, when the Lee and Marie story could fall apart. They kept Noshenko tightly locked up, but he was very close to Paisley, and that must mean with James Angleton also, and with Hart. And his wife came to this country, too, and is with him. Yuri Noshenko's wife is here, and they must be well-heeled, almost millionaires by now. But there was this controversy around Yuri Noshenko, who said all along Oswald was not an KGB agent. He said that all along. He didn't come here. He couldn't make a lie, because I think the Soviet Union then would retaliate and tell you exactly Marina's background. I think they had a hands-off policy in this case. And he held to the line that Oswald was not a KGB agent, which was true, but he didn't say he wasn't a Galen agent. He corroborated a story of another high agent with the nickname Fedora, a deep-cover CIA agent who works also as a double agent, who said Lee Harvey Oswald was not a KGB agent, but they never said he wasn't a CIA agent. And they never told the Warren Commission that Yuri Noshenko was around, and because they may have gotten, I doubt it, with the group they had together, I doubt they ever would have gotten into Lee and Marina as an agent. But somebody might have broken a story, and they kept Noshenko secreted away in Washington in this house, the vault with the room, the home built around him. So the CIA concluded, after all of their interrogation from mid-1964 to 1968, that he was, in fact, telling the truth, and that John Hart was there testifying before the House Select Committee how they interrogated him and how he lived, and that's another story in itself. If you didn't hear the hearings, we can go into that, but I presume most of you heard the testimony of John Hart about Yuri Noshenko. Now, you say Noshenko handled the CIA Soviet-Russian division. I'm positive of that. The reason I'm positive is that his personal contacts up to the present day with the CIA are so thick that they must have been very grateful for what he did. And instead of killing him, he may have put away papers as a contingency in case he's killed. He had to be a double agent in the Soviet Union that worked up to the top of the KGB and did these important connections. And as soon as he arrived in the United States, John Paisley, the man who worked with James Angleton, who set up the spy network with Galen, was one of the interrogators, and he confined him to certain questions. The New York Times says that he wasn't part of the cruel treatment, but how would we know what he did or what was going on? He knew he was in a single room with a 60-watt bulb and no books or records or phonographs, and he knew he had no friends visiting, no visitors, and a minimum of food, and he had to get up at 6 in the morning and stay up till 10 at night. It was a real torture chamber with no cigarettes, and nobody could talk to him, a silent treatment for 4 years, no toothbrush, no toothpaste, and so forth. But John Paisley and John Hart and James Angleton then, and of course E. Howard Hunt, had to all be in the interrogation and the importation. Later, when he got out in 1968, They gave him a house in North Carolina. That's where he is now. He's there with his wife, and he has a new identity of almost $1 million. He's on a salary from the taxpayers. And Nosenko and Paisley became very good friends. And if, as I say, if Paisley, at the time of his death, was in the top secrets of the Central Intelligence Agency, and he was still visiting with Yuri Nosenko, then you have to believe that Nosenko was one of our men all along. He didn't. Richard Helms tried to testify that he wasn't really sure of the position that Nosenko had or if he was telling the truth, which is just a big cover-up story for Richard Helms, because Helms, as the director of the CIA, was working over John Paisley and John Hart and Marianne Paisley and Catherine Hart, all high up in the United States counterintelligence, clandestine operations, connecting with the assassination teams. And they just wouldn't be socializing on a boat with Yuri Nosenko of the KGB. They wouldn't have that much in common with him. They wouldn't meet with him socially. But Paisley would take his boat. He'd go down the coast. He registered the ship near Nosenko's home. His last long visit was in 1978, and they were long buddies. They visited sometimes from 1 to 10 days at a time. Now, the CIA so far, according to Ted Salk, has refused any comment on the friendship of Paisley and Nosenko, which would be interesting, as I say, considering how thick they were up to his death and very close friends, and how it would be difficult with the top security clearance that Paisley had to be meeting even a former KGB man, and even if there were any suspicion at all, they had to be really sure that over 20, 30 years he was for real and had been a deep cover agent all that time. The CIA won't comment on Paisley's earlier role when he debriefed Nosenko. They don't want to talk about that, naturally. Nosenko's name didn't even break in the news until just the week before Paisley died or was taken away. We'll never know, really. So, in summary, this John Paisley was high up in the CIA working with spy satellites, which was what a U-2 is and what Lee Harvey Oswald was working with. He was important in their desk there, what they call their planning desk, while at the same time he worked with the counterintelligence desk. His wife, Marianne Paisley, was her immediate superior was Catherine Hart, who debriefed Nosenko. She was responsible for contacting employees and handing out salaries. She had a sensitive job with contract employees. They described her as a contract employee. The CIA tried to put her down as a contract employee, but that doesn't explain her CIA sensitive jobs or her work with other contract employees. I'm sure she was much above them, and she was in charge of a lot of funding. Catherine Hart, whose husband was meeting Nosenko and debriefing him when he came here right after the Kennedy assassination, worked for the senior, she was a senior officer in the requirements division. And her job, very interestingly, is to handle funds for clandestine operations overseas. Now, this is why I call this the connecting links, because Catherine Hart, working so hard with Yuri Nosenko, and her husband working with him and making the contacts and bringing him, when he comes to the United States, he has to only be with a select few. Where did the money come from that Lee Harvey Oswald picked up in New Orleans and went to Europe? Who supplied the apartment in Brussels? How did he get, well, we know his family sent him money from New York back to the Dallas-Fort Worth area, but the boat trips and the expenses that he had, and also the expense of bringing Alexander Zeiger to Minsk from Argentina, and then the CIA planning to bring his daughters back to Argentina from Minsk. These various trips multiply these over and over with many, many agents. I don't think Catherine Hart handled one family like the Lee and Marina Oswald family. But at the same time, she handled funds for clandestine operations by overseas CIA stations, so she should also be handling the money that brought the Sirhan family from Palestine into Pasadena. Again, a good story going to Palestine and James Angleton in 1948 and the transference of that family to Pasadena, friends of Richard Nixon's, bringing them in on the church front, and the CIA bringing a woman and a gang, I think there were five children that came in, and buying a house for them. That I'm sure, comes under the clandestine operations of the overseas division. So I think that these people that I mentioned on this tape today, Marianne Paisley, John Paisley, Catherine Hart, and John Hart, are terribly important to the missing links because of their links to James Angleton and Yuri Nosenko, and then the infiltration in the Soviet Union of agents of the KGB who manipulated Lee and Marina to get them safely back here and make all the necessary contacts with them to get their papers and their job placements. I think there are a lot of missing names in this puzzle, and I think that the death of Paisley or the disappearance of Paisley has brought out some new information that helps put these missing pieces. I call this tape the missing pieces. And I think these, I believe very definitely, are some of the missing pieces to the Nosenko, Lee Harvey Oswald, Galen, CIA connections. As I say, I'm sorry that John Paisley had to disappear, but he may be being paid $1 million or half $1 million or even more, just as they paid Yuri Nosenko. And I can't suffer for him yet, unless I'm sure he's dead, and I may feel badly for the body they probably substituted and threw into the water. Didn't even have time for him to grow a beard like the other gentleman had. Next week, I'm going to do an update of the news. My desk is filled with a lot of little pieces that fit into the big pieces of the puzzle, and we'll go into some of those together.